2 of the F590 show coming at you right now, live on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio alongside John G. Mighty Rudolph behind the dials. Hope everybody is having a fantastic Friday evening. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is the lead boxing writer for HBO.com. He's also written several books about Greenpeace. You can follow him on Twitter at Kieran Mulvaney. Kieran Mulvaney, how are you, sir?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well, my friend. Can't complain. We got a big boxing match, though, tomorrow night on HBO pay-per-view. Ward versus Kovalev 2. Kovalev, his only blemish on his record is the decision loss to Andre Ward. What can we expect in tomorrow night's fight?
Well, look, I think it's going to be very interesting. It's hard to know exactly what to expect because, look, the first fight was a really good fight, and it was really close. Andre got the decision by just 1 point on each judge's scorecard. I and a lot of folks ringside thought that Sergey deserved the decision by just a point or two. So I think what we saw the first time around was a tale of two halves. Sergey was dominant for the first four rounds. Andre really took it over and won the second half of the fight. I don't think we're going to see anything quite like that. I think it's going to be technical. I think it's going to be skillful. You got two guys trying to impose very different styles on each other. I think it's one of those fights that's going to be kind of tense, and interesting and very skillfully fought for 12 rounds or indeed less.
Do you think that Andre Ward, because it, like you said, it was kind of like a fight of two halves. It looked like the first half of the first fight, Kovalev was kind of, you know, imposing his will, I guess you could say, then Andre Ward looked like he kind of figured it out. Do you think that that's just going to continue into the second fight where Andre Ward's going to be like, yeah, I already know how to fight this fighter. I already know what to do. I figured it out in the second half of the first fight. I'm just going to continue it in the second one.
Well, I think that's absolutely it. I mean, I think that you touched on the right point there, because even though, like I said, that I thought that Sergey won the fight, it was very clear that Andre, you know, took the second half. And I spoke to them both today. They weighed in today, and I spoke to them both afterwards, and I said to Andre, look, as far as you're concerned, is this just round 13 of your ongoing 24-round fight? And he said, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. I just got to do, you know, we always make little tweaks. There's always little changes here and there, but I got to do, just keep doing what I did in the second half of the fight, and I'm going to win. And Sergey, conversely, you know, he said, you know, the reason that he fell off in the second half of that fight, he claims that it had nothing to do with Andre Ward, but the fact that he had overtrained going into that fight and he hit the wall in the fifth round. And the way he sees it is, look, when I had energy, when I was crusher, he couldn't do anything with me. It was only when I faded. This time I've trained better. I'm going to be the crusher. He's not going to touch me.
And when you look at the measurables of these two fighters, I mean, they are right down the middle. They're both the same height, both fighting at the same weight. This isn't a catchweight fight. Sergey Kovalev is a year older than what Andre Ward is, but other than that, it's not like there's a big discrepancy there. I think that's the reason why maybe you're seeing these fights so even, is because they're so similar.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because they're physically similar, but they have very different styles. And here's one of the things that makes it very interesting. Sergey Kovalev, strictly, you know, it's easy to categorize him as the puncher, right? Because you look at their records, he's got many more knockouts. He calls himself the crusher. He is the puncher. Andre Ward, far fewer knockouts. He's more of the boxer. But what often happens, what you generally think about that, you think, well, the boxer's the guy who's going to maybe want to keep this distance a little bit, fire out the jab. Punches more, the guy who wants to get in close and wing his punches in. It's the opposite way around with these two guys. So Kovalev gets his best punches if he's able to keep the other guy at the end of his jab in range for his big right hand. Honestly, although he's a boxer, he likes to move inside. He wants to cut inside. He wants to work in close. He likes to hit guys to the body, smother them, beat them up a little bit to the body. And that's what he was able to do in the second half of the fight. And that's what makes this really intriguing, because you do have two very skillful guys with these two very different styles, and each is going to be trying to impose that style on the other.
Kieran Mulvaney from HBO.com joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Kieran Mulvaney. There were four fights on the undercard. Guillermo Rigondo versus Moises Flores. Luis Arias versus Arif Magomedov. Of these fights that are on the undercard, which one is the most intriguing to you?
Well, actually, there's one that you haven't yet mentioned, which is Cedric Agnew against Dmitry Bivol, which I'm very interested in seeing. It's a light heavyweight fight. Agnew's already lost to Sergey Kovalev, but Dmitry Bivol is one of an increasing number of hard-punching, skillful guys sort of around that weight limit from Russia and from Ukraine, from that kind of area. And it's going to be, I'm really interested to see Dmitry Bivol. The co-main event, you mentioned Guillermo Rigondeaux against Moises Flores, that's being fought at 122 pounds. Rigondeaux is one of the most skillful fighters in the world. Marvelous Cuban emigre, but he completely divides opinion amongst boxing fans. There's a segment that just thinks he's an artist, that he's absolutely brilliant, and he's completely underappreciated. And there's a segment that looks at him just kind of moving around the ring and dancing and not seeming to really show a great deal of passion, who thinks he's the most boring thing on earth. And so it's going to be very interesting to see which Guillermo Rigondeaux shows up. And Moises Flores is taller than him. He's also undefeated. As they say, somebody's O has got to go in that co-main event. So that, I think, will also be very interesting.
This is, you know, without question, the biggest boxing match until the one in September that I think the most people are excited about, and that's Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin. I think the entire boxing world is eagerly anticipating that one. What do you think is the most interesting angle about that fight? I know we have some time to you know, discuss and talk about it, but right now, what do you think is the most interesting angle about that fight?
Wow, just so many. I think one of them is the fact that, you know, 15 months ago or so, I think Gennady Golovkin would have been a very, very big favorite against Canelo Alvarez. And Golovkin was banging the drum for that fight. Canelo's promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, kept saying, yeah, we want the fight. But nonetheless would steer Canelo into other matches and sort of where he could earn a lot of money, get a lot of fans, build up the reputation. And it seems as if, to be honest, that strategy was very smart, because we come into it now with, I think, you know, Golovkin, it's possible. He's in his mid-30s. He might have lost a little bit off his fast. And, you know, his knockout streak ended in his last outing against Danny Jacobs. He got hit a bit in the fight before that against Kell Brook. Whereas Canelo Alvarez appears to be getting better and better. He's getting stronger. He's getting a much better defense. His offense is much more well-rounded. So I think one of the very interesting storylines is the fact that it's a much more even fight than it would have been even 18 months ago, even though lots of people, including, frankly, my fight made 18 months ago. The job of the promoter is to look after their fighter. That's what Oscar De La Hoya has done with Canelo Alvarez. And as a result, I think we're probably getting a better fight than we would have done if it had been earlier.
And I think it's an interesting point that you just made about Golovkin, about, you know, aging boxers. And, you know, the common theme in sports is that Father Time is undefeated. And
right.
that it doesn't become more clear or more evident or more rapid than in the sport of boxing when you see somebody in the ring, because you can, you know, show all the highlights of their previous fights. You're like, that's the fighter that you remember. And then you can see them walk into the ring and they're going to look maybe the same. You know, they're still going to be in shape.
Exactly.
They're going to get, they're going to have that slather going. And then they get in the ring and they try to pull that trigger and it's not there.
That's exactly what it is. You know, you so often you hear boxers, once they go past that point, they go, I saw my opening. I knew what I had to do, but I couldn't pull the trigger. Exactly, you know. And whereas once they would have thrown punch and it would have landed either where the guy was or in advance of the guy getting there, if you know what I mean, steering him into a punch, now they see it. Like the synapses take that little bit longer, and by the time they throw the punch, you know, the guy has gone. And it's very... Some guys, you know, will decline gradually and maybe have a couple of peaks. And then sometimes Father Time will just come and it'll hit you over the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
I mean, you look, for example, for me, I think one of the most dramatic cases is Roy Jones.
Absolutely.
Years was the single best fighter in the world and no one was even close. And then suddenly he was getting knocked out left and right, just like that. There wasn't a decline. He went from number one to not in the, you know, nowhere near the top, just like that. And it is like you said, boy, it's bad enough, right? At least if suddenly you can't even hit at the Mendoza line when you were a 320 hitter, it's embarrassing. But it's only embarrassing. When you're a boxer, it's a lot more than that. It's really deadly and dangerous. So,
like you said, it's deadly and dangerous. And I would say almost even more so embarrassing, because boxing is an individual sport, so it's just you and the other fighter in the ring. Everybody's looking at you, and everybody's watching you get old right in front of their very eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And never is it you're more naked, really, than you are, in any other sort of situation. And you're at a point there where you have people, you might have the referee, you might have your corner going, dude, do you still want to continue? Do you still want to continue? And as a boxer, you have this kind of torment because actually, no, you don't want to continue. But you're a fighter. You fight your heart and you don't give up. And that's why when it does start to happen, you do need to have, a trainer or a referee or somebody to step in. Now, I'm not saying that Gennady Golovkin's decline is at that kind of level at all. I think he's just taken, I think that instead of being, at 100%, I think he's just at 97%. But when you're as incredibly dangerous as Golovkin is at its peak, even that slight decline might be enough to give guys like Canelo Alvarez a bit of hope, a bit of belief that maybe this time they can actually go in and be the guy to get his first defeat.
And Kieran, your example of Roy Jones Jr. is just perfect because I grew up watching Roy Jones Jr. and he was just not only just so dominant in the ring, but just so entertaining too. I mean, if you want to enjoy boxing, go to YouTube and just type in Roy Jones Jr.'s greatest hits. And just the way that he would toy with the opponent and he had fun. And then, boy, he had those two fights with Antonio Tarver, and it was a nosedive right after that.
Right after that, exactly. And, a lot of folks feel that what happened was that he put on he moved up to heavyweight and he won the heavyweight title. But he put on a lot of muscle to do that. And it was losing the muscle. It wasn't even just losing weight. It was taking off like 25, 30 pounds of muscle that really weakened him and made him and really sort of accentuated his very rapid fall.
Kieran Mulvaney joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Kieran Mulvaney. Kieran, not everybody knows, but outside of boxing, you did a lot of work with Greenpeace. I'm sure that you were extraordinarily disappointed when the United States backed out of the Paris Environmental Treaty.
Yes, hugely so. I mean, not just for the potential impact, but also what it says about the commitment of the United States to address what is one of the most serious global issues we face right now. That the encouragement is that for a long time there's been a sense that actually we look at federal governments, we look at governments at the national level to sign the agreements, to make the moves, but that increasingly in many cases cities have been where the changes have been happening. And I think one of the interesting things that we are seeing is large cities and a lot of states are saying, it doesn't matter, we're still going to meet our commitment. The state of Hawaii actually signed up individually to the Paris Agreement just the other day because the federal government had left. And so, and in a sense, it's also a real motivator. And for me, the saddest thing about it is that it is displaying a 19th, 20th century mindset in the 21st century. The race has been run. We're about to be at an economic tipping point where renewables are simply economically more viable than the old fossil fuel. We're getting very, very, very close to that already. Solar energy, wind energy, they employ more people in the United States than the coal industry does. And the prices are coming down. It is an inevitable change, as well as being something that we absolutely have to address. And that was what, as much as anything, was just so tremendously disappointing.
When you were working for Greenpeace, were you out there on those boats going after those Japanese whaling vessels? Is that what you did?
Yeah. I led four trips to the Antarctic to go chasing around the Antarctic and look for Japanese whalers. And what we would try to do is, when we found them, we would launch inflatable boats and put them, try to put them between the whaler's harpoons and the whales. They were long trips. I think the longest that I was at sea was for 97 days. And finding them was hard, right? Because they had a fleet of four ships, and the area that they were operating in was pretty much equivalent of the United States west of the Mississippi.
Sure.
So just imagine being you're in Utah, and somewhere out there are four cars. They're not as far east as, Kentucky, but they could be all the way up in Washington State.
Sure.
So find them. Good luck.
Yeah, so. No kidding. What was the moment that you were most scared for your life?
I wasn't, but I did get concerned for the state of some of our crew one point where one of our trips, the Whalers decided that they had simply had enough, and they started deploying high-pressure fire hoses to aim, like, at the faces of our guys in the boats, you know, and that's freezing Antarctic seawater being blasted at force in their face. And that was the point with one of our trips where we thought, you know what, we've got to actually take a step back and think a little bit about our tactics, because we have a thing that we want to do, but we don't want anybody to get hurt, God forbid, killed in the pursuit of that. So we kind of like ramped it down a little bit, and we tried to reach out to them then. And so, you know, every time that we came alongside the ships and the boats, we tried to, we'd throw candy at them, or we'd wave at them, or we'd make sure that they could see our faces so they could like relate to us as individuals and so forth. And we tried to do a bit of a bond, look, you're doing your job, we're doing our job, we don't have to, you know, make this
resort to violence
thing.
What kind of candy would you
we did very much try to do that.
What kind of candy would you throw at them?
You know, I honestly can't remember. It was cold. It was a bit hard, so they probably didn't always appreciate it. Because, you know, it's the Antarctic.
Sure. Maybe, so, like, you were throwing, like, Starburst at them. They threw it back. We want Skittles, damn it. I mean, anything like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Kieran, thank you again for your time. Enjoy the fight this weekend, sir, and we look forward to having you on again soon.
Thanks very much. I always appreciate it.
Thanks, Kieran. That is Kieran Mulvaney from HBO.com. Andre Ward versus Sergey Kovalev on HBO pay-per-view this weekend. You can follow Kieran on Twitter at Kieran Mulvaney. That is his Twitter handle. We'll take a commercial break, and then we'll talk about something else going on here in the world of sports. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.